That's right. Welcome in. As I see some people texting in, what is going on? I'm really confused on what's happening on the station. As you heard, the big voice guy. I like that, man. Wake me up, baby. I needed that, damn it. I needed that. Woo! There we go. Wake me up, baby. As you heard, the big voice guy, this is our first and hopefully an annual Reggie and Ron Radiothon, as we are here to raise money for the Houston Food Bank. And listen, I know the power of, at least I believe, hell, you know what? I don't even think I even know yet the power of the people of Houston in Sports Radio 610. I think I know it. It's one of the best radio stations, sports radio stations in this country. And I think this is another way that we'll be able to show that in, and that is helping the Houston Food Bank. And they have had, if you're just joining us, they have had their budget cut from federal funding by $11 million. They've even had cuts from the amount of just physical food that they have there as well. And we want to do whatever we can to help them. And we're giving you a lot of different opportunities to do so. And my man, Reggie, who is along for the ride, will be here. This radiothon is going from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. My man, Reggie, along for the ride with me. Seth Payne is in the building as well. But Reggie, I know you've got some numbers and some updates.
Yeah, so we're sitting at $600 right now. The way to donate, text Sports Radio 610 to the number 71777. That'll get you the opportunity to donate, which Sean Caldwell has done. Shout out to you, Sean, for adding in to what we're doing here. But there, that's, we're trying to do that. It's worth every penny that you drop in there, because for every dollar, the food bank's able to get three meals to the people of Houston.
Three.
Real efficient stuff happening there. This is a great way to get things done. But then also, if you also want to help yourself out, there are dinners that we're auctioning off. So I want to start by letting you guys know this. There's four dinners, obviously one for each of the shows. It'll be you and a guest and obviously all of the folks on the show having a dinner for Payne and Pendergast. It's at Churrasco's for In the Loop. It is at a J Bar M Barbecue for the drive. You guys are going to be at Carbog Brewing, and then Area 45 will be at Christian's Tailgate. That'll be the locations. But we already got a bid in. Do you guys want to guess which show has the bid? At least as far as I know right now. We're clarifying to make sure, but there's one show that has received a bid.
We're in Payne and Pendergast country right now. So I'm gonna guess it's Payne and Pendergast that got the first.
It is Payne and Pendergast that has put us on the board with bids for the shows. And right now, the starting bids are $250. However, this person, they wanted to fend off competition. $500 is the bid.
Nice.
Right now for Payne and Pendergast, baby.
That's big. Oh, there you go.
Yeah, that's really good. There, and it's at Churrasco's. Oh, we're going to have fun after that. Once you end up winning with a bid of $3,000 after the frenzy ensues, then by all means, yes, we're going to have a good time at Churrasco's.
Hey, listen up. With that $500 bid right there at the very least, at this point, man, we're up over 1,000.
That is
true. All of every single penny, 100% of this goes right to the Houston Food Bank. Their goal is 3,000. I want to blow that out of the water. And I know with your help, we can do that.
Wait, so in 1 hour, we've hit a sixth of the goal that the food bank has set.
Yes, I have a personal goal. But right there, we can hit that. And all, as we said, all of it goes 100% to the food bank.
Yes, it does. And already, just here, man, we're doing a great job here. Shout out to the 281. I believe that's Mason Medina, who was like, heard that $11 million cut, immediately dropped in and put some money on it. We appreciate you.
Nice.
Doing
so, yeah, text Sports Radio 610 to 71777, and it's all one word, Sports Radio 610.
It is. Yep. All right. I got to give it to you, Seth. I'll be honest with you. I have not done. Hey, let's get up at 4 o'clock in the morning to get here on time radio like you're doing every single day. And I'm good. I was good with the wake up. I'm good with everything right now. I got my ass to bed. I put my kids to bed and then I went to bed, which was helpful. But I feel bad for you, man. Ain't nothing open. I tried to drive around to get. I just wanted to get, some energy drinks, maybe a little something to eat real quick. I did three gas station stops. You can just pump gas. You can't go inside to get nothing. It was, I mean, I was like, damn, I can't go and get an energy drink somewhere?
But then when you're done at 10 a.m., which you guys will not be, then everything's open, but nothing is crowded, though, too. It's a sweet spot. My 5 p.m. is like at a time of day when there's no traffic, there's no anything going on. Because at 10 a.m., anything that I need to do, any errands I have to run, I can do them while being also extremely tired while doing so. I've got the rest of the day to be exhausted when your workday starts so early.
Yeah, that's a good point. I will say, though, I'm very jealous of Sean in particular because he's got a great routine of going to the diner immediately after the show.
Is that what he does?
Immediately after the show, get him some breakfast, start getting on the next show. And I think if you do it right, you could be done by like noon and like have the rest of your day to yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. You
guys will be, this is doing 12 hours like this. My advice would be to treat it like wind sprints. Like if you have to run 12 wind sprints, the first couple, your legs are going to be, if you haven't warmed up a lot, you know, it's going to feel awful the first couple. But then you'll get lathered up, and then round about the midway point, you'll start hitting your stride. And it'll just be that last couple of the 4 p.m., the 5 p.m. hour where you got to really maybe just take some spark or something, you know?
Yeah.
Rely on the pharmaceuticals at that point.
That's right. Someone just texted in, I got 750 for pain and Pendergast. Well, all right, do it. Hey, make the call, 713-572-4610. Hey, damn it. There's a good time to be had with the drive, and there's a bottle of Blanton's as well to go along with that. So 713-572-4610. The bid starts at 250. Let's get it going. Obviously, you can do Area 45 and in the loop as well. But
I don't like the way you said that.
I'm just saying, hey, mm-hmm. It all goes, man. Mm-hmm. We're all.
This will be those dinners are going to be. I think those are all going to go for good amounts for anybody, whichever your favorite show is or whoever you want to have dinner with at the station. That's going to be a good time.
And
we've done these before, and it's always a lot of fun.
As we said, the bid closes at 5 o'clock. All right, I wanted to bring this to you guys.
Okay,
and especially my man Seth. And obviously we can all dive into this because I'm looking at kind of what we're seeing in a transition here with some of the teams here in Houston. Is you got CJ Stroud, who is now entering his third year and becoming a leader and starting to kind of fit into that. I've talked to Clint, who will be on a little bit later. I talk to him every day. He has said he feels like that's the next step for him to grow as a leader. He's their best player. Kevin Durant is coming in now to Houston and is their best player. There's been questions about his leadership role. And I just want to throw this out to you guys. You have covered sports, Reggie, and watched sports. Obviously, you have covered and played in the National Football League for 10 years and all around it. Just simply, does your best players need to be your leaders? That is, because I've heard so many people go in different ways with things like that. Do they need to be your leaders? And is that something that CJ Stroud and Kevin Durant, guys like that need to raise their level? Is that a need?
You know, that's interesting because I know Lamar Jackson had talked about that this week or previously that he wants to take on more of a leadership role. When I the first time I ever remember hearing an NFL person talk about it was Tom Coughlin. When Tom Coughlin told us specifically he didn't want his quarterbacks to have too much on their plate when it came to leadership because they've got a whole lot of other stuff to worry about. So in terms of just being the vocal guy or always being, rallying the troops and all of that, that there's a certain element just where competence alone is probably the best leadership trait on a football team. That if you've got competent veterans who work hard, some of them are going to be vocal, some of them aren't. But really, it's the sum total of the guys on your team that matters. So if you go back to various championship teams, the Spurs, the Spurs in the last decade, who was the alpha male leader on those squads? It was just, they had a bunch of solid professionals. You look at the Warriors, whatever that form of leadership was, it wasn't conventional. It was almost like
it's like a tag team between Steph in his way and then Draymond in his way. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's always, I think it's one of those things that we really want it to be simple and be able to say, like, oh, nope, here are your team leaders, and these guys are the captains, like in all the football movies, and it'd be help if he's good-looking, and Hollywood will love it. Like, it's just, there's more to it than that. So it's more about just the overall, if you have a lot of guys on your team that are good followers and willing to follow, you know, they might have their own leadership traits, then all of a sudden, like, leadership almost becomes an afterthought because you got enough solid dudes and there's a standard expectation that I try not to worry about identifying, oh no, this guy's the leader this year, or that guy's the leader this year.
Yeah, I tend to think that it's helpful if your star player is your leader, because your leader guy needs to be one that is going to be prominently featured in moments that matter. I think that's – so if you're a star player, the guy who you need to have on the field, on the quarter play, what have you, at that big-time moment is the leader, then you're straight. But, I mean, you mentioned the Warriors, where Draymond Green is clearly leader guy. I always think back to the 08 Celtics, where Kevin Garnett, was leader guy, even though at that time his actual on-court game was waning a little bit.
Yeah, but he was so respected and still
– he was still leader guy.
Yeah, and
but
really good.
He mattered because he was still in that main part of that rotation, even though you have, you know, Paul Pierce and Ray Allen kind of carrying more of the load there. He's part of that facet. So, yeah, man, I'm with you where you're talking about having a lot of professionals, but at the same time, there can be that really strong leader guy as long as he, though, is in that rotation and is – I mean, maybe – your second or third best player that is in there where you're going to have them in major moments. You're going to have them on the field. Like, you talk about leader guy with the Texans, and you point to C.J. Stroud. I keep thinking about Will Anderson Jr. But still, he's one of those guys that's, you know, high-level player. He's going to be on the field in those major moments, and I think that it's easy for people to fall in behind you, right? And I imagine I'd lean on, Seth, your experiences in locker rooms where – I'm sure that there was really great veterans who were a little bit further down the depth chart that people respected, but they can't be the guy that ultimately everybody followed.
But the quarterback has to be, right?
Well, no. Like, was Eli Manning a great leader? You know, they managed to win two Super Bowls with him, and he's like you. It went from, remember, before they got good, it was, well, Eli's just dopey. Look at him. Look at his stupid face. You win a Super Bowl, and all of a sudden, that exact same face is, wow, he's just unaffected by the pressure.
Look at his
He just doesn't,
face.
Boy, he just doesn't it waver when face. It's.
It is a stupid face, though.
I think they have, like, Will is obviously a great, I think Jalen Petrie is a great leader.
The Texans might not be the easiest way to go because there's, like, leaders all over
Joe Mixon. Yeah, but I don't know. I do feel like potentially on this team, CJ may need to. And I think Kevin Durant potentially on this team. Listen, I respect Fred. And I know Fred has won a championship. And I think there is that. But Kevin Durant, Kevin, Jeff Green, and Fred are the only ones who really have – like that level experience. I know Steven Adams has played in the postseason. I almost feel like and maybe I'm off on this, and it's 713-572-4610, YouTube and Twitch, you can jump in on this. I do feel like in these particular aspects that I do think these two teams, in a way that I don't think Jose Altuve needed to jump up and be a leader for the Astros because there were other guys there. Maybe that changes this year. But I feel like in these situations that those two guys need to be leaders for this team. Maybe I'm off. Maybe I'm off on this, but it feels like these situations they do.
The Jabari Smith Jr. was on a podcast, and I don't know what the podcast was, but he was talking about Steven Silas. He said Silas was a good coach, but nobody could control that. He's the nicest dude in the world. He knows basketball, knows what he's talking about. But as far as controlling us, it was tough for him. Ime, Fred, and Dylan came and put some control on it. So, I mean, like, Jabari Smith Jr. there just alone saying, he would cite, look, Ime Udoka and having a culture that he demands or whatever his expectations are. And then, yeah, Fred VanVleet and Dylan Brooks. Like, they changed the culture a lot.
Yeah.
To where if it were still Silas coaching this same squad and whatever would have happened in the last couple of years, and you try to bring Durant in, I don't think that it would be, that's not necessarily the leadership. That guy's not going to change the culture. But if he's coming in where the culture has already been changed and shifted a lot, then it's not as essential that Kevin Durant be a vocal guy. It's more just that he's got a guy who has a really high standard and expects productive basketball. and however he leads by example, that's enough when the culture is right. If the culture was trash, yeah, it probably wouldn't be enough.
And that's probably a good thing, seeing as Kevin Durant has never operated as vocal leader. I always looked at it where sometimes I wondered if Kevin Durant wanted the ball in Oklahoma City. And, like, people got on Russell Westbrook for taking those last-second shots. And I
think,
like,
he wanted it. I think Russ wanted it.
Maybe so.
I think Russ said he wanted. I never thought Kevin shied away from it.
Well, you remember that was a time where Kevin Durant was doing the thing, like, when people were trying to call him the Slim Reaper, which, by the way, one of the best, you know, nicknames ever given to a player, that he was like, "Nah, I'm good. Call me the Servant." Right? Like, he was trying to be the guy that was like, that was really good, that did all the right things, and maybe outside of what his probably what he actually wanted to do, just trying to fit the role. And I think that
had
also
that weird tattoo situation going on. Yeah,
right. And I think
he didn't
also
want any visible tats, so it was the shape of a basketball jersey on his body.
Yes, yeah, or maybe that was just in order to hide it, right? So that it was just like, I look like I don't have any tattoos, but I actually do. But yeah, I think that that also took him to a place where he wasn't willing to be the guy that commanded the basketball. Now, of course, he's grown to a place where now
he sure took that thing with Steph and Clay on the court.
Yeah, yeah, I think that was a level of growth for him. But I still don't view him as like vocal leader guy. I will say though, as much as you're like, hey, I don't know that Fred. I think Fred is like still the perfect guy for that, because I don't think Fred got enough credit for being, and I'm sorry to keep referencing Draymond Green, like that guy to the defense. Which is, I mean, one of the integral parts of what this Rockets team has been, which, like, just being an incredible defensive team. The guy that helps organize is the guy who holds everybody accountable on defense. Like, hey, this is where you need to be. I think Fred was more of that than I think we tended to give him credit last year.
So do you two think Will Anderson for the Texans and Fred for the Rockets are enough to allow CJ and Kevin Durant to not have to potentially get out of character and be vocal guys because those guys are alongside with them? Because it seems it's natural for those two.
Well, I think with a quarterback, the biggest common trait amongst the really great quarterbacks who are just consistently good is that they are very demanding of just the execution of their offense. So whatever the leadership form it takes and whatever their personality style is, the most important thing by far is that, okay, this guy has command of the offense. He knows and can communicate exactly what guys need to be doing and has a level of obsession over it. So, like, on a very functional, you know, X's and O's, nuts and bolts level, it's like, are you a good race car driver? You know, do you have full command of everything? And whatever your personality style is, as long as it's good enough that, and I do believe CJ has this, that guys, when CJ asks guys to do something, they take it seriously. You know, like, they very much, they respect him, they appreciate him, like, and they're going to try to do their best. And I think CJ is wired that way. But then, you know, like, the quarterback can only do so much for the defense or anybody else. Yeah. I think it's just the actual competence of getting the job done and putting a good product out there. Like, you just got to be wired for that, and I think CJ's wired for that.
It becomes more vital this year, too, with the ways that the hints that we've gotten on the offense and the ways in which CJ's like, I'm having more of the reins. It does become more vital if you are going to be that guy to be vocal, right?
He's got a first-timer in Nick Caley running an offense, and that part of it too. And like you said, he is sounding like he has taken ownership. By the way, Seth, I think Nick Caley has maybe one of the most difficult jobs in football.
Why is that? Just because he's being looked like he's got to just get the quarterback on track in basically 3 weeks.
I think that Bobby found out a little bit of this. I think he's in a situation where the fan base, and not even just the fan base, but people who cover the team have not yet reached a point where D'Amico and CJ Stroud get it. Like, get the critics. They're not turning there yet. People are not, especially the fan base. If this thing doesn't go well, he's going to live in the vein, in the space that Bobby Slowick lived in, to where they're going to go there.
But I think part of that, though, too, is that it's really easy and obvious last year when you see the pass protection issues that they had, and then the injuries at wide receiver, especially, that kind of added on to all of that. But it's easy to see where there's an explanation for the drop-off. I guess the big step this year would be if CJ was getting good pass protection and things just still weren't gelling. That's where I think that's the rubber meets the road on that. If they get in, if they can't fix the pass protection and they still can't run the football, then I think that CJ's still going to get a pass and there's going to be a whole lot of fury on Kaylee, but then also D'Amico for if Kaylee doesn't work out as a coordinator, then
you
that's
think D'Amico
twice now
gets
that
it? You think
D'Amico has hired the wrong guy. Yeah, people start to have – that's the reservation people are going to start having is like, all right, well, this is classically what you worry about with a defensive-minded head coach, that he's not going to be able to get the right offensive coordinator. So that's – I think it goes – that's the hierarchy. People are going to bail on Kaylee first, then D'Amico, and then CJ would still be at the bottom in terms of like willingness to bail on the guy.
I think they might try to slide to Nick first. I think they might try to slide to
Caserio?
Nick before,
to Caserio
before
oh, okay.
they get to D'Amico.
Well, especially the attachments where you talk about John Carroll guy, like their New England kind of influences. I think that those attachments, whether right or not, will be the things that
well,
get
plus,
you there.
If, yeah, if the offensive line is still an issue too, then that all goes back to Caserio for not putting a good O-line out there. Yeah.
For however I'm saying it, D'Amico and CJ right now are Teflon. Damn near to me right now. And I think you've created the scenario, Seth, of how that could change. But right now, like, those are the last guys to me that people want to put stuff at the door. What am I trying to say? The door?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Bring it to their doorstep.
Because,
for sure.
I mean, last year, I mean, Seth, you know ball, and you know ball. Some of this is got to be established by the head coach. Like, some of this has to be at his feet. Some of this, like, yes, I know there were protection issues and things like that, but some of it was bad ball by C.J. Stroud. But people aren't ready to put it there yet. And I understand, especially here, those two guys single-handedly, it felt like, changed the entire direction and tenor of what the hell we were dealing with. I left Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City to come to a preacher just ruining the organization with nastiness happening with the quarterback. Like that, yeah. Like, and they came in and saved and change that. So I can understand why people feel that way, but that they're just not ready to lay it there yet.
Well, you know, and like it's because there's legitimate reasons for the drop off last year as opposed to just making excuses. And the what you have to hope for is, I mean, if you look at Gary Kubiak when he came in, it was 5 years of him choosing the wrong defensive coordinators. And it was at a point where it looked like the Texans had just this miserable defense that was never going to allow the Texans to do anything. They hire Wade Phillips, and then they go off and make a couple of under-heralded free agency moves and bring in Jonathan Joseph and Danielle Manning. And all of a sudden, they were a really good defense because they stumbled on to the right defensive coordinator. So with D'Amico, that's... I mean, so much of it is that, aside from some of the personnel swapping out that they did, obviously, it's that D'Amico in his first year as a head coach, it's easy to see him making the wrong decision on a guy that he was personally loyal to. And that's the biggest test for him, is just, did you get the right offensive coordinator? So this year with CJ, yeah, how much could you point to if CJ's not playing as well or delivering on the promise of his rookie year, how much of it is going to be easily identifiable as, okay, yeah, well, this offense still isn't helping versus CJ actually making mistakes or what have you.
Especially because the offense and the responsibilities that he have is something that it's reasonable to expect a guy in the first instance of doing all of that to have a little bit of a steep learning curve, right? Like, I think that there's reasons to go, all right, if he does not make every read properly, there's a lot on his plate and you can give him a little leeway. I think you're right in saying that there's things that you can point to in the positive, in the pro list for both D'Amico and CJ. We've seen CJ be a very good quarterback, so we're not just going, well, he's not a good quarterback, right? I think that the negatives you can then say, we can lean on this, the things that we know he's done well. D'Amico Ryans has made a top-tier defense in the league. We can at least lean on those things, even if there are some criticisms that one might be able to levy at them. You talked about Bobby. There's not a lot of the things that you can kind of use as a cudgel to bat away the negatives there. And Nick Kaylee, I think similarly, if he comes in and it doesn't work out, I think that's where it'd go there first. But you talked about getting the protection right, and we were talking about leader guys. That was one of the problems, probably, we could say, with the offensive line, is that there might not have been leadership to kind of hold up what's happening there? Do we feel, because it feels like Titus has been like this, the elder statesman, the guy that's kind of been vocal talking about this defense being nasty. Does it feel like he is going to be some level of leader guy on that offensive line?
I think there's a very good chance that yes, and I know a lot of people are kind of ambivalent about that. Like, all right, are we sure that we want Titus to be the guy? He's at a stage in his career where, like, sometimes when you're asked to serve a different role, where Titus was never going to be one of the vocal veteran leaders on that offensive line, I think, as long as Laremy Tunsil was around.
Yeah.
And that sometimes guys change a little bit for the better when all of a sudden they are kind of put into that leadership role or have those expectations. And especially if you combine it with, I think, with Kaylee and Cole Popovich, they're going to lean into a more physical brand of football. Just, you know, double teaming defensive tackles up into the linebacker's lap. Just a more physically imposing bunch. That's what Titus does bring to the table as a guard. Like, he's still, like, makes me nervous in some of the pass protection things, but he's a massive dude. And when he gets off and just plays the physical brand of football at guard, there is an element of physicality to that offense, including in the Chiefs game. In that third quarter drive, there was an element of physicality to that offensive line that I didn't really think they had in their bag. But it is there. So if Kaylee and Popovich are preaching that, I think Titus can actually end up having a calling card in that part of the game. It's just being kind of a bigger, old school, bruising and physical offensive line.
All right. That's definitely got to be where the improvement jumps. I don't know, leader, whatever. Can y'all just be average? To me, like, that's I know that's a low bar, but can you just be average? Because there are many points, as you know, Seth, they just didn't have a chance. Like, they just didn't have a chance to operate and do anything to me, if you can just be average, I mean, I've watched, you know, the Bengals have some success with Joe where they were just held just a slightly below average to give them a chance. The Chiefs at times last year just average to give them a chance. The Texans weren't average many times to even give them a chance to do anything.
You look at the biggest difference between the Chiefs offensively last year and the Texans offensively. The Chiefs were not themselves, obviously. They weren't the same bunch. But they got it to third and three regularly. And it's a hell of a lot easier to convert third and three. So they would. So a lot of the stuff that they were doing that didn't look that impressive was still putting them in competitive situations. Then you ended up at the flip side of the spectrum, and CJ's got as many second and longs and third and longs like at the highest rates in the league. Those are really, really hard to convert, whether you're Pat Mahomes in his prime or Tom Brady in his prime. When you're multiple times having to convert third and 10+, you're not going to sustain drives. So that part of it, like the complete inability to run the ball effectively on first or second down, you don't have to be the best rushing football team in football. Like, you don't have to establish the run in a conventional sense, but you got to at least be competitive. You got to at least be being able to run the ball on first down and be then, okay, it's second and 7 instead of second and 12. So that's the biggest part. The level of difficulty for CJ to overcome some of that last year, yeah, some of it was self-inflicted, but the vast majority of it was just, man, you're putting the quarterback in situations where it's really hard to succeed.
And I've been rewatching the 2024 season. We've been doing it on.
You really have been doing this. That's an interesting.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Like every one of the games?
Every one. I just got done with the New England game. Thank you. I appreciate it. But it has been insightful because you talk. It was very easy to see early in the season the ways.
Like,
are you
rewatching the full game, or are you doing like a 10-minute?
I'm doing the condensed version, but I'm seeing all the plays. It's still really? Honestly, if you talk about the investment, the time investment, and this is pulling back the curtain a little bit, it's probably not good math because I'm spending a couple of hours going through like rewatching individual plays at times to see what's happening on ones that I find interesting. So it's like a couple hours for a 15-minute segment. But obviously all of that rewatching gives us an ability to talk a little bit more intelligently about what's happening right now. And one of those things is CJ was able to make up the difference when the so-so offensive play was happening early in the season. It just became, after time, it wore down. And I think we recall that from during the season where you talk about the self-inflicted things. Those came later on as he was having to try and shoulder more and more of the load and then trying to make more Superman plays as I think he realized, oh, the help is not coming on the offensive line.
Yeah. You know where you'd see it when you go back and rewatch the games? Because I'm not doing it sequentially like you, but I've been watching a lot of the older stuff. Is you see the cumulative effect in the fourth quarter. I mean, in that Chiefs playoff game, you see the point where CJ has spent three quarters not being able to trust and rely on the protection, to where even when the protection is good at times in the fourth quarter, you can see CJ starts to get a little hurried and a little erratic and a little quicker to flee the pocket because he's been getting battered in the previous three quarters. That part of it, that's just obviously a huge factor. But getting to where the clock in his head can be relied upon, like that's almost like the rehab that has to get done at the beginning of the season, hopefully, to where you can kind of reset the clock in his head so he doesn't end up one of these permanently frazzled quarterbacks that just doesn't expect or anticipate good protection.
All right, somebody texted in and said, has there been a new lineup change? I'm so confused. No. No, nobody has been fired. Sean is alive and well. You'll hear from Sean coming up in the next hour. But no, if you are just joining us and you haven't been seeing things leading up in the week, we are doing our first annual Reggie and Ron Radiothon, as we are trying to help the Houston Food Bank, as their budget, federal funding, been cut by $11 million in the last year. And we are looking to do everything we can to kind of help them in any way. And I know you, Reggie, have some updates. By the way, to do that, please, right now, any amount works. Sports Radio, text Sports Radio 610, all one word, to 71777. Sports Radio 610 to 71777.
Yeah, and if you donate $25 or more, we'll make sure to shout you out. Like these fine folks who got there and donated to the Houston Food Bank: Dennis Bridges, Cameron Sims, Jeff Irwin, and William Rustem. Appreciate all of you guys donating. And appreciation to another dinner on the board. If you don't know, we're also auctioning off dinners with each of the four shows on Sports Radio 610, Painted Pendergast, In the Loop, The Drive, and Area 45. It's you and a guest with an opportunity to hang out with the fellas of that show for a dinner. The leading bid is that Painted Pendergast $750. In the Loop is on the board, baby. $250 is the bid.
Good and for you all.
Mind you, any of the shows, all the shows you can bid at right now, we're not opening them up just in those time slots. You can bid on any of the show's dinners right now. Just all you got to do is call in 713-572-4610. Talk to my guy, Jace. He'll get you marked down. And all of this, 100% of the proceeds go to the Houston Food Bank.
Text line coming through. Can we help the food bank without show? Please. No. Nope. Hell, you know what? Act like I'm not here if you want to help the food bank. You could do that. Just
pretend you're like donating money to get Ron off the show or something.
If that helps it for you. Yeah.
No idea. If you donate $10,000, Ron will sit out the next 2 hours. We'll do that.
I'll be willing to go for that. I'm willing to go for that. If you can pony up 10 grand.
Yeah, you go. Yeah, 10 grand. I'll sit out an hour. You're damn right. Go ahead and throw that sucker in. Text that 10 grand to Sports Radio 610, or text Sports Radio 610 to 71777.
Yeah, by the way, Ron, don't worry about it. There's nothing worse than going on in somebody else's time slot. Because it happens with the pregame shows on Thursday night games or whenever, when we're in your Sean and I will be in your afternoon slot for the pregame show, and the text line is just filled up with like, what the hell? These guys?
What's going on?
Seth and Sean, I specifically don't turn my radio on until 10 a.m. to stay away from these guys. So don't take it personal.
But no,
happens to all of us.
Again, you ride with the drive, man. A bottle of Blanche right there for you. $250 starts the bid.
That's right.
No, man, it's all of this. All of the proceeds, 100% of the proceeds are going to the Houston Food Bank, and we're getting there. Their goal is 3,000, and I think we're already at almost
1,300. So we're already trying to take down that 3,000 goal.
More than that, when you add in the bids,
that is true. Well. That's true. Another grand of bids as of right now. Of course, you can 713-572-4610 is the number to call in and bid on those auctions.
That's right. As we continue here live, as Reggie and Ron Radiothon continues on, please, you can bid through the breaks. You can call through the breaks as well to put your bids in, and text Sports Radio 610 877-672-7177 to donate. Any help, anything you can donate will help as we continue right here live on Sports Radio 610. That is right. Welcome in. No one is fired. No one is fired.
Not
this
yet, at least.
Is,
we're about to be on air for 12 hours. It's possible.
I am. My wife, I think, is very concerned. Ron, don't say nothing stupid. To get yourself in trouble.
Where does that rank on getting fired if you get fired during a charity event?
That's pretty high. I got fired at a Christmas party once.
You got fired at a Christmas party?
Yeah, I did.
Because of something you did at the Christmas party?
Something someone who was with me did.
No. Oh, but, wow. You got fired on someone's behalf. That's crazy.
Yeah, it was.
To the Christmas party?
Yeah, well, there were two ladies. They were my bosses. They dated as well. And the best way that I can the best way that I can describe them, if you watched wrestling in the early 90s, late 80s, they looked like the tag team, the Nasty Boys. If you if you want to look up what the Nasty Boys looked like, they were in WWE, WCW. They looked like the Nasty Boys. Knobs, and I forgot the other guy's name. One was a blonde that looked just like him. She was the big boss, and her assistant was her.
Jerry Sags.
Jerry
huh?
Sags and Brian Knobs, I believe is his name.
Correct.
That's what they looked like as a pairing. And so we went to the old Christmas party, right? And it was, and I've learned a lot from this, it was one of the old open bar type of scenarios where you go in open bar. So my thought was, I'm in college. I'm like, yo, all right, we got a little open bar action, and we'll do that little pre-drinking and then go out and kick it afterward. So we did some pre-drinking, and she thought that the guy, one of my friends who I brought with me, came my plus one to get a little drink in. She thought that he was somebody else, and like she really came up to him and was like, she thought he was somebody that used to work there, and you know it was one of those all black folks lookalike type of situations, I guess.
Well,
and he was like, ma'am, I don't know who you are, and she kept trying to make him leave, and then he just cussed her smooth out. I mean, it just got.
So your buddy went off on one of your bosses.
She was like, hey, she was staring him down, and she went to him like three or four times, like, what are you doing here? And like he said, my name is Kenny. She kept calling him Sean or something. He's like, my name is Kenny, and then he finally just cussed her out, and we're getting pushed back at the door, and security has come over and told us to leave, and all this and that, and then I was told not to come back home.
Man, that's a, you know what? That's probably it's a great story to tell show for a lot of the people who might be in their first jobs right now, that your inability, not that you were at fault, Ron, but
he apologized. He felt so bad. He apologized.
But your inability to control yourself, or like you want to drink like you're still in college when you're out at some work event, you gotta bring that in. I've seen guys last less than a month with a company because they acted like a jackass at some charity event or something because they were boozing like they were at a frat party.
Yeah, those Christmas parties, man, I'm a one drinker out. Maybe I don't even go to some of them. I am not letting that happen. And my wife's going to be the only plus one that I'm bringing in. I know she won't let it get away from her. But no, man, that was my got fired at the Christmas party.
So we're not going to top that today.
No, we're not going to top
just
that.
No, there's no way.
No.
Okay.
No, I'll be good. Someone said, did you sue? I said, probably could have. I probably could have had something there. No, I didn't. I did not. I just went on about my business and kept on going. But our business today is hopefully for you to help us feed Houston and help the Houston Food Bank. You can text in right now, Sports Radio 610 to 71777.
So that's not to our text line.
That is not to our text line. Nope, text Sports Radio 610-271-777, and you can have a chance to donate. And all the proceeds go to the Houston Food Bank. And as Reggie has said, you can also bid as well on these dinners we have. And all four shows, $250 is the start. All you got to do is call in, 713-572-4610. Jace will set you up and get your bid in.
Yeah, 250 will get you on the board for a dinner with The Drive or a dinner with Area 45. You're going to have to go a little bit higher than that for In the Loop. The current bid is 250, and the current bid on Pan and Pendergast, Seth, you'll like this. A nice grand, nice round grand. $1,000 is on the board for Pain and Pendergast.
All right. All right. Yeah. Pain and Pendergast, $1,000. If you can beat that, it keeps upping the ante, too. And like my feel the pressure I'm going to feel to provide a memorable evening.
We got to get on the damn board.
As people spend more money, I start to get more and more nervous. I'm like, oh, these guys might really want a party.
Are you bringing out a tablet and breaking down film?
I got to commit myself to just potentially not getting any sleep before the next day's show if somebody's going to spend $1,000 or
more. It could be a weekend. Maybe it's worked out where you don't have to work the next day, Seth, and you can really just let your hair down.
Yeah, we'll figure this out. Okay, yeah. Sean's probably still sleeping on vacation and not aware of how much he's commanding right now. So, but all for an awesome, awesome cause. The food bank, we've done work with the food bank for a while now, and it is amazing how efficiently they do help get food to people who need it. You spend a dollar, they get three meals out of that dollar. So every dollar you spend is going out to help a lot of people, a lot of kids that just want to be able to make it through a school day without being hungry. You can do some great things just with whatever you feel comfortable donating.
I'm glad I got you guys here, especially Seth, who's a father,
I'm a son as well. I know that you're trying to find. I'm a son. I understand the dynamic to some degree.
I was going
to
say, and Reggie was dated someone with children.
How do the Titans frame it? Like a father-like figure? Who knows? Reginald's a father-like figure in a lot of people's lives.
I feel like...
Not the stepfather, the father who stepped up.
I don't know if you've run into this, Seth. My father-in-law, not on purpose, but I feel like he's done something that is, I'll be honest, kind of made me a little jealous. And I feel like I'm missing out on a bonding experience with my son. And it's been brought to light to me by my father-in-law. And I feel like...
You're giving him beer?
No, not yet. I feel like...
Not yet?
I feel like...
In the coming days, eventually.
It's something that I need to take over. I went out before I went for a run yesterday. Okay. For a walk. / run yesterday. All right, a walk to the gym to get on the treadmill to do a walk elevated. Anyway, I walk out and they're in there playing a PlayStation. They're playing baseball on it. And like they're in my son's room, they're in the bed. My son's like excited. I'm just kind of standing at the door. I can see through my son's room from the front door. And they're having a good time. I get back, and they're still in there getting after it, right? And then a little bit later on, when I got home from work, my son and them, both of them are telling us the entire story. They played two games, and they're breaking it down. I am not a video game player.
Yeah.
Never, ever. I've never been into video games. I've told the story on the show before. I've had one. I got a Sega, and I was just like, all right, I played Sonic. I beat it, and now I'm good. And I've never been into Madden, never been any of that. But I feel like, and I have never played anything with my son. He's 11. Yeah. I've never played a video game at all. It's just not my thing. I feel like I'm missing out on some bonding experience. I got a little jealous.
You know what? That's a tough one because I think if anything – you can feel good about just your son having that special relationship with your father-in-law. And it's in a way like that's the beauty of extended families, right? Like everybody kind of fills in a little different role and everybody, you can fill in the blanks and everything. So like that's why it's so awesome to have grandparents in your kids' lives. I'd say just go with it, man.
Let that be his thing. Because I'm thinking, I need to go in there and start picking up MLB The Show? Do I need to, like, I'm just like, I just looked there, I'm like, damn, man.
Your son's gonna be, pick something that your son won't be able to beat you at until he's like 16 or 17. That's because you're gonna get in and you're gonna suck like the entire time. You're never gonna have a chance versus him, and he's gonna have that power over you. You can't enter the door for you to lose your alpha status by your son crushing you. I'll tell you a cautionary tale about this. You know, my dad, he's a dairy farmer. At this time in my life, when I was like 5 or 6 or 7 years old, and he's doing the classic thing that divorced dads do. He tried to, you know, bribe us by getting an Atari, and like before a lot of people had Ataris. But he's a dairy farmer. He's dead broke, and he's got to get up at 3 a.m. every day. He started playing my brother and my stepbrother. They were older than me, and he couldn't beat them at like Asteroids or whatever it was. So he started staying up like all night long playing video games so that he could beat his own kids, which led to sleep deprivation, which led to increased actual beatings of the kids. So he sent him down a path of like he was going 72 hours at a stretch with no sleep because he was so obsessed with beating his own children at video games. Don't do that.
Yeah.
Don't become like
You're right. I do have a little competitive
gene
that might get me to that space.
I don't want to be a dairy farmer hooked on meth, man. It doesn't end well. I'm going to tell you that. All right?
Yeah.
It's a bad recipe.
I'm like someone texted in, you can try his show, he will like it.
He has an opportunity to throw something in your face. That's the problem.
I looked at it and I looked at them, and I'm not going to lie. I wish that I did take it from a standpoint like you just said, Seth. Oh, that's cool. That can be something that you and Grandpa have together, or as he calls him, Pawpaw. But no, I looked at it like, damn, maybe he has been craving to play, you know, to have some enjoyment with me doing that, and he just don't have that. And the excitement jumped up, and I do feel like if I laid in the bed and tried, like maybe we could start some conversation. He'll tell me who he has crushes on, and things like that. Maybe this is about, I mean, we bond in other ways, in other sports and things like that. But I don't know. I just felt like, damn.
Well, yeah, you got to at least give it a try. Just don't go.
I've not done that, Seth.
Don't go into it thinking like, okay, this is what I have to do for 3 hours a week. I'm going to spend time with my kid, and I'll have a spreadsheet that lays it all out. Hey, just give it a try. Maybe it ends up being that. Maybe it's not, and you figure out other ways to not neglect your child.
I already can't fix anything. They already do all of that with him.
Ooh.
Oh yeah.
I mean, but you got sports. You got that sports lane, really nicely set for you, right?
The in-laws have been with me for 3 weeks. They've fixed multiple things in the house that I just cannot do. And he does.
You got to commit to then?
I've got
to
play video games. I've got to pull that one.
You can play video, or just the next time you find something in the house that needs to be repaired and you feel like, I don't know how to do it, just watch a YouTube video. And it could be something simple like tightening a hinge or something like that. You will feel such a sense of empowerment from it and pride. And your son will look at you with an admiration for you having done something. As far as he knows, you've always known how to do that.
Last time I did that, Seth, I had to call Mr. Sprinkler to come out, and I had to pay more than I actually
You created more damage than there already was.
Carl Winslow, that thing.
Yeah.
Seth, appreciate you.
Yeah.
Seth, go ahead, man. Enjoy the rest. The rest of your day. This was fun. As Seth will take off, enjoy your holiday weekend as well. And yes, it will be back to normal on Monday. Payne and Pendergast will have things rolling. But Seth,
is Sean back
you.
On Monday, Seth?
Yeah, he is. Yeah.
Okay, very
as
good.
As I know.
There it is.
I just show up. Yeah.
Payne and Pendergast. What's the bid at for Payne and Pendergast right now?
I believe last I heard it was 1,000. However, there might be some bidding happening right now. Our guy Jace is furious on the phone lines. Again, 713-572-4610 is the place to place your bids on the Payne and Pendergast or the In the Loop or the Drive or the Area 45 dinners. It'll be you and a guest with an opportunity to hang out with the fellows of Sports Radio 610 and all of that. 100% of that money goes to help the greater Houston area through the Houston Food Bank.
Reg and Ron, the Reggie and Ron Radiothon continues as we roll through live right here on Sports Radio 610.